you know, these revelations of that elite at a very high level, and we actually know the basic a number of them as well, are doing human trafficking, human rape, and human sacrificing of children because they're the closest to God. And when I like read this, I mean, it's unthinkable. Like, you don't want to believe it. And so I mention it on Joe Rogan, but I also mentioned that I was starting an AI company. And what shocked me is after the show, more people wanted to talk about the AI thing, and more people were upset about, you know, that I was starting an AI company than they were about, you know, this nightmare of elites eating babies.
It's the first time since 2012. First time since 2012. That there are no British actors nominated for Best Actor or Best Actress. Yeah, British spokesperson said, yeah, well, at least we arrest our pedophiles. So, we got that going for us.
And so then I started thinking about why is this happening? Well, like, and I mean, we've seen people who have spoken about it, who have, you know, been... who have participated in it and who have left, you know, it's an initiation that you go through to become a confidence initiation that you go through to become part of a team. And that's when I realized that this is not something that's unique to the elites, that human nature involves these kinds of hazing initiations, or else we wouldn't see it happening since childhood.
Andrew Breitbart, I'm quoting you, in a newspaper interview he gave last year discussing the people who run Hollywood, quote...
Uh-oh.
Yes, quote, I'm telling you, they're uninteresting, they're vicious, they're vitriolic, they're really, really not good people, and I'm willing to say that on the record, close quote. Is there any of that that you regret?
No.
What makes them really, really not good people?
Well, I'm not saying the entirety, but the ones who have controlled Hollywood for the last 40 years, that quote could be attributed to the campus left as well. It could be attributed to people who are in charge in Venezuela right now. Anywhere where the left gets control, you start to see political correctness run amok. You start seeing dissenting views quashed. They use projection right before they do so. They start attacking the people that they're about to go after of being guilty of the very things that they do.
And lesser magic, which the Satanists do, they'll tell you, they show the thing in play before they do it. They believe it makes it happen, and it gives it more power once they do it. And then you have the Podesta plan that if Trump won, they would actually do this and have the military turn against Trump, but now they've tried it. It's not an endorsement of Trump. He's doing some things I don't like right now. The point is they are literally pre-programming this and admitting it.
Yeah, and they're willing it into happening, and they're showing everyone an example of what it would be. So that, again, the revelation of the method, you see what's there, and it makes it okay for it to happen. And it's a form of also of predictive programming.
And you started it on the show, but then I do it too. He cut you off on another subject. Elaborate, because I've studied the Graham Grimoires, Black Magic, all that stuff to understand these people. They talk about you have to show them, you have to tell them, that's a metaphysical rule. It also gets them ready. And then it makes it even more powerful when you actually do it. And then you realize that they're doing this. Speak to that if you can.
Well, we live in a universe of mind. And the one thing I've started to realize is that these kind of forms of spells, this magic is real. When you believe something enough, you create a reality.
Yeah, we call it a spell. What it is a narrative to control your mind, and we can build incredible things. So it's a program.
It is a program. You select it, you project it, you expect it, and then you collect it. It's the spec method, and it actually works. And so people who are using it for, you know, there's good spells and bad spells, and there's spells that are promoting humanity, and then there's spells that...
What's this? Oh, I've got Power Plan. Oh, what's this? I've got Methyl Drive, the two ingredients in the Power Drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them. Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
You're tuned in to The American Journal with Rex Jones and Tim Tompkins. Watch it live right now at band.video.
We love the deep dive. We're coming back to you. Second hour of The American Journal. I want to let you know right now, breaking news, they are hitting the hell out of Hezbollah in Lebanon and the civilian populations as well. There's some crazy footage coming out of that that we're also going to cover later on in the hour. Tim Tompkins with the incredible deep dive. Really appreciate you breaking it down, Tim. What do we have going on in Africa?
Okay. You know, this is my favorite part of the show, the deep dive. This is where I get to get into the specifics. We've been covering a lot about things that have happened here in America. I wanted to open this up to the wider world.
Right.
And there's a lot of underreported stories. There's a lot of things that are happening around the world that people don't know what's going on. And one of those places is the Democratic Republic of the Congo.
Right.
And that has been a region that has been plagued with war after war after war. I think they've been in conflicts for almost like 30 plus years.
Right. And this is one of the things Trump said he fixed.
Yeah.
That we're going to get into.
So if you guys have ever heard him say, I solved seven wars. This is one of the wars that he's referring to. I'm not sure what the other six were, but this one was definitely one of the seven that he was referring to. And so we got to start here. So, you know, Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of the Congo have been locked into a conflict that's tied to rebels and control of the Eastern Congo for decades. And so Trump has hosted both leaders and pushed this deal through. And you can see that on the screen. This is him signing like some temporary peace deal, but it's not that simple. But like, here's a quick breakdown. So Rwanda is supposed to pull its troops out of the Congo. Congo is supposed to crack down on anti-Rwandan rebel groups. Both sides stop backing the militias. And then the U.S. is supposed to oversee the pressure and keep both sides sticking to it. And that's just the surface version, but there's more things. And the real story is not just about this handshake that's happening in Washington, but why the conflict, it never ends, and why the U.S. has just suddenly decided, we're going to come in here and just save everybody and stop this war, you know? And so why does the U.S. care? The U.S. cares because you got to understand why they're paying attention. There's four aspects to this, right? We've got critical minerals. So East Congo holds cobalt, copper, tin, tungsten, and tantalum, which are like, those are core materials for EVs. And they've got smartphones, AIs, military data, tech. All of those things are controlled with those types of ingredients. Then you have China that dominates these supply chains today. And so the U.S. is also trying to take a shot at breaking their dominance over those regions. Second thing is they want to contain the chaos. The region has been one of the deadliest conflict zones on the earth for decades. And so this kind of means less, refugees that are coming out of that. The third thing that we care about is it's another like diplomatic win. Like we're talking about, like the U.S. gets influence and leverage, but then also
Trump's trying to like pat his record.
Yeah,
basically.
Well, I mean, this was him.
And it's a good thing too.
It is a good thing. But yeah, remember, cause he really wanted that Nobel Peace Prize.
I am the peace president.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
So this was one of the things that he was using to kind of to position himself for it. And then he just wants to keep Rwanda and Congo aligned with Washington, because remember, where there are power vacuums, there's the ability for, quote unquote, the enemy, China and Russia, to step into those regions. And again, when you have such a rich country with such with such extensive resources, you don't want that to fall into the enemy hands. So let's talk about Rwanda. We'll actually show where it is on a map. Let's go ahead and pull that map up so people can see. So you can see it's kind of like in the center. It is massive.
It's huge.
Okay. It is a very big country. It actually is almost the size of Europe. If I've got that graphic up there for number two, we can show the comparison between the DRC and Europe. You're just going to see, look, it covers pretty much all of Europe, minus Spain and Portugal, but like it just puts it in perspective. And so the Congo didn't just start as a normal country. It actually started as the European powers in the late 1800s came in and started projecting their power under this Belgian king. And so the
King
entire
Leopold II.
Huh? I don't
King Leopold II.
I don't remember the guy's name.
It has to be yeah. King Leopold. And this is a guy that I believe was known for. I think he killed like 2 million people. I think he was a guy who was like, "Oh, I'll chop off your arm or your leg."
They did a lot.
Yeah.
In that region. And there's a lot of things that they don't cover as much in history. And so the system was just built for one purpose. They wanted to go in.
Monster.
Yeah.
Yeah. This guy's evil. Go ahead.
Belgium was rich because it went into Africa. And they went in, they pulled resources, they extracted the wealth, and they basically left nothing behind for the people. And let's go ahead and play this video that's going to show down how the Europeans went in, carved up parts of Africa, and just did resource extraction. Okay, let's go ahead and roll that.
This image that we've sort of doctored up to make it a little bit more immersive, this is European leaders inventing countries in Africa in the late 1800s, carving up this map, looking for resources. And the Congo was one of the many inventions of Europeans.
Congo was created actually as the private fiefdom of a Belgian king in 1885. And so the whole purpose of the Congolese state was always to extract from the local population. It was never to create a government or a state that provides public services or public goods, including security.
The Belgians mapped it and discovered just how many valuable resources the place had. The most valuable at the time was rubber, and it led to one of the most brutal colonial exploitation campaigns in history.
It's got an enormous amount of natural resources. Congo is geological scandal, is what Congolese call it. It's the largest producer of copper in Africa. It's the largest producer of cobalt. It's one of the largest producers of diamonds, tungsten, tantalum, tin. You go down the list, they have it. The uranium used for Hiroshima and Nagasaki came from the Congo. Like a lot of Belgium's wealth came from Congolese mines.
Again, go watch part three of that series if you want a deeper dive. So the most important part of this section of the story is that Belgium didn't build a country out of Congo. They built a pipeline for resources to Europe. The roads and railways led from mines and plantations to ports, not between cities. It created ethnic groups and tribal identities and then played them off each other so that they could conquer them, but also, in the process, sowing the seeds for future conflict and division.
That deep history really is important, understanding where we are today, because a lot of the habits and the trends and the logics of the state sort of persist until today.
Some of the structural issues to Congo is still facing, moving from bad governance, destructured army, lack of a sustainable policy, that is actually where we can situate some of these trends.
Okay, so before I continue with this, I had a train of thought and I want to bounce this off of you.
Sure.
So we just see this a lot with the European powers, what they did in the past. And, you know, it just jogs my memory that they did this with a lot of countries, not just in Africa, but across the world. Right. And you had this play out in India. You had this play out in Southern America. And so they Middle East. They did this divide and conquer. And what you're seeing now, and this is just eye-opening, because as I've been researching and understand, a lot of the stuff that you're seeing where there's like these generational conflicts, arguments, people like going to war with each other, and the destabilization comes a lot from this time period.
Sure.
Right?
Well, and that's the thing. And we look at the project going on right now with Israel, with the colonial project there. It's literally, you can talk about what's happened in America, maybe like 100 or 200 years ago. you have people here that have been trained to like recognize colonialism, especially on the left. And you look at what's going on over there. It's literally an imperial project.
Well, it was, right?
Yeah.
Because and not to diverge from the deep dive here, but if you go to Israel and Palestine and all of that, that was something that happened when Britain was still kind of in its last dying era. It was still in that power position where it promised the land to two people.
To speak, Navy, I think I understand the point that you were making earlier. To speak to what you're saying, we have an area where you have Jewish people, Arabs, whatever, just living in peace. And then suddenly it doesn't just become a place people live. It becomes the British mandate of Palestine. And
yes.
You draw lines around
draw
it.
Draw lines
you
around
cut
them.
It up and you make these decisions. And then that – we see the ramifications centuries later from stuff like that all around the world. I mean, Africa, like the people living there, they didn't get a say in what the continent was going to be.
Yes. And you've probably heard of the Kurds, right?
Sure.
The Kurdish people, they've got like 40 million people.
The U.S. has faked them out numerous times.
Right. I mean, everybody's used them.
We're going to give you a state. Ooh.
But I did a whole article on this on the newsletter that we have, and it was the same thing playing out there, too.
Right.
Britain and the colonialists went in, carved up these regions, and they didn't leave the state for the Kurdish people. They just said, right. Well, you know, Iran looks like this, Iraq looks like this, and then we'll keep Turkey like this. And then we'll. And so you just see like these powers are just dictating everything across the world. And we have conflict after conflict. People don't even remember the history to know why they're fighting in the beginning. Right.
True.
So you just see these things play out for hundreds of years, and the true people that had bad intentions never get punished, and it's always down the line. And so we have to get out of these cycles. And that's why, you know, you see Europe today, their economy's dying, Rex.
Yes.
They have no ability because they're no longer able to do the resource extraction that they were able to do before.
Right.
And
right.
So there's only but so many countries left that are willing to deal with this type of mentality, which is why you're seeing more people trying to compete for those last dying resources.
Well, the thing is, like, people are like, why would we just surrender to you and give you everything when the stuff that we have is the stuff that powers your entire civilization?
Right, right.
So that they actually want like a seat at the table.
Yes, they want a seat at the table. And so I mean pretty much when the Britain and all of these countries went in, the Belgians went in, they basically left a weak central authority, no real infrastructure, deep ethnic divisions. They created artificial races for them to compete against each other.
Right. Well, I mean, you think about the Houthis and the Tutsi. I'm messing up maybe the names of the tribes, but what happens is I think they put the Houthis in charge and they killed all the Tutsis.
Yep.
And then that's like, oh, that's a, and now the area is depopulated and they control it. And it's all planned. It's all planned out. It's a system of control. Because the British people, the Dutch, they figured out, okay, we can send 1,000 people to a region, and if we figure out what languages the people speak, what they believe in, who hates each other, we can back both sides against each other, and then come out on top when they're both dead.
Yep. It is sociopathic behavior, but,
sure.
I mean, they figured it out. And so now you have, you know, Rwanda's genocide that's flooded with these armed groups. And so in 1994, you had Rwanda explode into this like genocide. And so armed militias and civilians start fleeing into eastern Congo. And
right.
So it's the exact same extremist groups that were responsible for the killing. And so those fighters, they regroup across Rwanda's borders. Rwanda sees it as like a direct unfinished threat. So Rwanda keeps intervening and invading inside of Congo to go after those people. And so the Congo pushes back. Then it spirals into the two groups where you got Rwanda and Congo fighting each other. And so you had the first Congo War, then you had the second Congo War, and this is called Africa's World War.
Okay.
They had their own world war. But here's the part like most people miss. Over time, Rwanda's involvement in the troops only stopped being about security, right? And then the Eastern Congo is packed with these valuable minerals and backed by rebel groups like M23, which gives Rwanda influence over that territory. So now Rwanda is involved for two reasons. It's not just that security, but it's also mineral access. And so this is a major reason why the eastern part of Congo never sees any type of like, you know, stability. And so let's pull up graphic number three, showing what that East Congo region looks like. It's going to shock you. It just looks like a bunch of mini countries. And you can zoom in on there just a little bit. You just see everything carved up, and it's just all of those blobs are different regions controlled by different militia groups. And you got to pay a different
tax if you're passing through, and we're going to get to that.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. But yeah, I mean, look, it's like during those wars, Congo's national army basically falls apart. There's no discipline. There's no structure. So the local villages start creating their own self-defense groups. And so then you see it's not just rebels, but the people are protecting their homes. And so eventually Congo's weak government arms those groups to start fighting the rebels back, backed by Rwanda. And so this becomes the turning point for the conflict. So once these militias get the weapons, the training, the experience, the taste of local power, they don't want to give it back.
Right.
And so then the weapons that are mostly like Soviet era guns like AK-47s, PKMs, RPKs, RPGs, they're like cheap, they're durable, they're everywhere. And so Congo becomes flooded with the Cold War weapons that never go away.
Right.
So now the war ends on paper, but these groups are staying active and they stay alive because the state can't protect anybody.
Mm-hmm.
The economy's broken, and then fighting becomes the only way to survive. So the armed group become the local authorities by default. And so this is how...
Might makes right.
Yes.
Literally.
Might makes right. Level.
Yeah.
Yes. And so now there's a power vacuum that you have to deal with in a militia ecosystem. And so, you know, it gets worse than that. These militias don't just fight. They actually start running a business.
Oh, okay.
And so... You know, when we look at this, this war starts to turn into like this business model. And, you know, we don't ever have to fathom something like that here in America.
Well, war is a racket,
you know,
and I think we do fathom it here in America. We're just kind of on the other side of the table. We're kind of the house.
You know? We're kind of the house. And, you know, the rest of the world is watching, but they're also kind of involved. And so this conflict stops being about taking the capital, but or winning the war. It becomes just extracting value from the territory itself.
Right.
And so you start to realize, like, wait, we kind of forgot the whole reason why we're fighting. And it's just generation after generation. So now, to your point, these militias started setting up roadblocks. They started to tax the farmers.
You gotta pay the tax.
They started to take cuts from the mines. They started to control the villages. They started the forced recruitment. And so, you know, the Congo's own soldiers, the right. own government of Congo, they are now also doing the same thing. And so this underpaid government troops, they start to set up checkpoints. And it just becomes like this Lord of the Fly situation, you know? Like, and that's the part
there ain't no justice out there. All there is like a bunch of rape, a bunch of murder, a bunch of drugs, like a bunch of kids with AK-47s running around.
Well, and the reason why, like I watch these stories, I read these stories, and these are the moments that I start to, you know, appreciate that the fact that, you know, what America has built in terms of like legal systems and sure. government and police
that's
and military. Because, you know, if somebody does something wrong to you and steals, you at least have an ability to go after that person, or you like we're getting robbed, you know, silently through a paycheck, but it's not like somebody saying hand up half your belongings to me or I'm going to shoot you in the face.
Exactly.
Right. 100%. So we got to remember not to take things for granted sometimes because it could be worse.
Sure.
You know, you could have been born anywhere else, but you had the privilege of being born in the United States. And I don't say that lightly. I say that for myself as well.
Very grateful, yes.
Super grateful. So let's go ahead and play this next video that's going to show the gold and how it leaves the mines and the traveling that it goes through. Because a lot of these security groups, like we were talking about, it's about the resource extraction and it has its own pipeline. So let's go ahead and roll this clip.
You have millions of people digging for tin, tungsten, and mostly gold, actually.
This is a pit mine or artisanal mine.
This is thousands of young men digging in hillsides, sometimes in terrible conditions, in lots of different pits. They're dotting mostly very remote hillsides in eastern Congo.
They work in these harsh conditions, often with little more than shovels, pans, sometimes bare hands, pulling gold from the soil.
These are fairly militarized pits. You'll find soldiers. They'll provide quote-unquote protection and security in exchange for a payment.
This is unrefined gold. So it's extracted. Maybe it's powder or flakes or a small nugget. And then it starts its journey towards the city. But this journey will cross through the territory of dozens of different groups.
Roadblocks are one feature of the landscape of the Congo. And there are thousands of them.
Road roadblocks are everything. So one of these armed groups has a roadblock, and they demand a cut from anyone transporting minerals. If you know the system well and you're well connected, you have relationships, that will help you with these transactions, ensure that they don't get violent.
Go into a little hut and you give them what is expected. There'll be some negotiating back and forth, but you pretty much know what you're going to have to settle for. They'll get some of that.
Now, again, I want to emphasize, this doesn't just happen for gold. You can be stopped for anything. You can be stopped for carrying cattle. You may have to pay just to move through the checkpoint. Again, everything that moves will be taxed.
There could be 50 or 60 of these roadblocks before you get to a major city.
A motorcycle could be taxed a few bucks to pass. If you're a big truck, maybe you're taxed $700 for a single checkpoint. And according to the people we talked to, a lot of these transactions happen without violence. It's the threat of violence that keeps the order going out here where there is no government. Wait a minute. But look, that is a soldier. That is an official Congolese military soldier, like from the government military.
What do you think about that?
Well, they know it's not a threat of violence. They know it's imminent violence if they don't immediately do what is required. Because like this is, it's a different world. Now, we sit over here, we're driving around our air-conditioned cars, listening to, I don't know, Drake or whatever. And it's just these people, we need to be grateful for what we got, man.
Yes,
seriously.
We do. Yes, we do. And again, it's like, you know, a lot of these countries, and it's not just specific to Africa, a lot of these countries around the world, like I said, have been plagued by like the bigger power that
came in.
Often
the richest as well.
Yeah. And it's that resource extraction. Just imagine if every country that had its own resources just traded in the free market with what it had. Imagine what countries would actually be higher up.
Well,
that actually be superpowers compared to what's happening right now.
That's literally the entire thesis of BRICS. That's what BRICS represents, is nations trading based on their own national resources backed by their currency.
Right.
So
now the problem is, and I'm thinking about it critically here, and we're coming up on a break, but I'm thinking about
we
it.
We got next segment. We're good.
Yeah. What I'm thinking about is like they also need to have help in infrastructure to actually extract the resources properly and set up the systems that are necessary for them to have a thriving country. And so when you've put a country back so far for decades and decades and decades, it's like it requires an outside force to come in and help. Now, do you think, you know, America and these Western nations would be so privy to do something like that?
I think the reason why we have these major conflicts is to distract from these minor situations, because if these things weren't going on, then we'd actually, hey, like, what's going on here? How many people are dying in this area? But because you have these world-ending conflicts all the time that are about to happen, it just gets swept under the rug.
Yeah, I mean, like, think about how many times Syria got swept under the rug.
Right. Oh, we don't talk about that.
We don't talk about that. And the genocide that was happening there. And the
still going on.
And there's genocide that's happening in the cobalt mines in Africa.
Sure.
And people are like dying by the tens of thousands every single day. So it is shocking. And the whole reason why we do these deep dives is just to shed light on things that are not nearly covered as much as they should be covered.
Yes.
And so that you just learn something new each day, because that's the whole point of the show, is like, we want you to come out of this learning something new and be like, okay, I can go and do something with this knowledge.
Yeah, the saying is warts and all. This is humanity, warts and all. This is the stuff that nobody else is going to show you, because it's not fun. It's not fluff. It's not, you know, necessarily a cool thing to talk about, but it's real. You need to know that it's going on. We need to be empowered, because we want to actually change the world, don't we?
Yeah, we want to change the world. And we love every single person out there. We're coming up on a break here, but we appreciate you guys sticking in. We've got another part of the deep dive coming up in a shortly. See you after the break.
My people perish for lack of knowledge. That's what the Bible tells us. Another way to say it is, those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. God has given us compounds in nature that aren't just important, they're vital, they're essential. If you don't have oxygen for 4 minutes, you die. You don't have water for 4 or 5 days, you die. You don't have food for a month, you die. And why is that? Because there's nutrients in the food you need that are essential. Well, iodine is one of the essential nutrients. We have massive shortages of it in our depleted soils. Now, I have a new CIA declassified document I'm going to hit here in just a moment. But first, I want to show you a few headlines. UN study, 2 billion people suffer from vitamin mineral deficiencies, particularly iodine, the number one cause of cognitive disabilities in the world today. Here's another one. Salt smarts how iodine has increased America's IQs. starting in the 20s, we had super low IQs like iodine. They put it in 15, 20 point increase. My point is, this is a known fact. It just got declassified 2 weeks ago, CIA Operation Artichoke in the 50s. They said, we've been tasked by the big tax-free foundations, the Rockefellers and Carnegies, to dumb down the American people. And we're going to put poisons in the food, the water, and the vaccines to dumb them down to make them more manageable. Absolutely incredible. So right here, ladies and gentlemen, I have taken a few drops of our new T3, even better than X2, pure atomic iodine, and mixed it with our medical-grade methylene blue. Both of these supercharge your cells, clean out your body, and counter the effects of the things now being admitted by the CIA. That fluoride calcifies the pineal gland and jackets your cells where they cannot transmit. And I've been telling this for decades. So they have major studies, but now here it is. CIA declassified research. The human body is a liquid crystal that is literally transmitting and receiving a transceiver. And what does fluoride do? It literally blocks that. What goes in and strips that out? Iodine and methylene blue, they act in different ways. So this is information that the bad guys not want you to know. Also in the CIA document, they admit that most cancer is microscopic worms. There's hundreds of species that get in and colonize your body, amoebas, and eat your breast, your liver, your brain, you name it. And then they call it a tumor and cancer when they're just areas of your body that have been chewed out. Now, you've seen us with countless doctors and scientists on talking about this. Not all cancer is this, but the majority of it from studies is, and they are again telling you that you just got to die. And if you've got an infection of parasites in your brain or whatever, if they hit it with radiation, it kills the parasites. But the radiation also kills your regular cells. Turns out the majority of people in the world have one form or another of parasite. Here's the Daily Mail. CIA faces furious backlash after a hidden document. The potential cure for cancer is declassified after 60 years. We've talked about this for many, many years. We are totally vindicated again. And right now, we finally have the original pure iodine back, but even stronger, now known as T3. The original X2, but even better, at thealexjonesstore.com. Again, ladies and gentlemen, T3 and what it does for your body is amazing. So for a limited time, you can get T3, our new iodine, the very best ever, at thealexjonesstore.com if you're a VIP member for 50% off, regular customers 25% off at thealexjonesstore.com. It funds the operation, total win-win. Now, methylene blue, you fill in 30 minutes on average. Iodine takes about 2 weeks to kick in to get the full effect, but it is just as amazing. You are insane if you don't go to thealexjonesstore.com right now. You get our Ultra Methylene Blue and the new T3 that's even better than the next two. The same formula, but stronger. Exclusively available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And I thank you so much for your support.
The Osama bin Laden studio, which is now Gray Area Talk Studio. It looks a little bit better, but that's us, you know, with our great team, Wes and Damon, controlling things in a virtual room. We just don't have the same resources we have here, and it's so amazing to be able to do a fully produced show. We thank the crew and everybody listening. Rex Jones, Tim Tompkins, let's do the deep dive.
Yeah, so, you know, we were just covering, you know, the origins of what's happened and the resource extraction. But the thing that we got to look at is the global markets and the exporting that's happening. So
sure.
More often than not, you're probably using a device or something, or if you bought like a necklace, there's a strong possibility that it's come from this region as well.
I mean, think about the electric cars. I mean, how many of those do we see driving around? That's tons of everything.
Tons of everything. And again, when you're so far and you don't see how the supply chain works, you don't really think about it. It just comes as a finished good there. You don't realize that it's like, you know, built off the backs of like dead bodies.
Yeah, and slaves, literally,
yeah,
and slaves. Dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this isn't to like shame anybody. I mean, you're not in control.
We're all complicit
in the system, right? So, you know, Uganda's gold exports, they went from about $500,000 in 2014 to about $2.3 billion in 2023.
Oh,
And Uganda didn't just suddenly discover gold. What happened was the Congo's conflict ended up starting this smuggling system that created the refined and the gold. I mean, it created refined. It got smuggled in, it got refined, and then it was sold as legitimate. And so that's what you're seeing on this picture here, is once the gold leaves the mine, it passes through dozens of roadblocks and checks. Then it gets smuggled into Uganda or Rwanda. Then it gets refined, and then it gets shipped to Dubai, and then it's mixed in with clean gold and becomes untraceable. And you just see, like, I mean, how could you know a supply chain and where the origins of these things come from? And so you see that line down there. But then also you had a lot of outside companies, a lot of Western companies and people going into Uganda and setting up shop in a safer region, but taking their resources from the disturbed one. And so you've got gold. It's not just gold, right? You've got tungsten, tantalum, cobalt, all of it flows through the same dirty pipeline. And so this pipeline connects Congo directly to jewelry, electronics, EV batteries, military tech, global finance. And so this conflict just keeps paying for itself. And it almost is like, you almost don't want to fix it, right? Because it's cheaper to not have it fixed. You know, if you have legitimate systems in place and you have real companies that are extracting it properly, and you have to pay people a reasonable wage to do that, then the cost of everything goes up from there.
Right. And you could say, well, maybe it leads to a new age of peace and prosperity. They're not interested in the new age of peace and prosperity. They're happy with the old age.
Especially whoever is benefiting for right now. And so let's pull up number five here, because we got to go back why the U.S. is stepping in. This was something that happened a little while back, but this is Trump brokering a peace deal. Let's go ahead and pull up number five here. I should have had you guys print this.
No, it's all good. And just keep in mind, this is one of the stop seven wars.
Yeah, can you just zoom in on that first part up top? The proposed DRC economic military plan.
One,
yeah.
U.S. access to strategic minerals, a little bit out. I got it. Okay, granting U.S. companies extraction and export rights to secure a stable direct supply chain for defense and technology sectors. Two, banana deepwater port development. The DRC proposes granting operational control to U.S. firms, ensuring American and oversight of a key African mineral export hub. Three, establishment of a joint strategic mineral stockpile. The DRC is prepared to work with the U.S. to develop a strategic stockpile of Congolese minerals, enhancing U.S. economic and security resilience. Got to get the components to put in the missile somewhere. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's always what it's about. Number four, strengthening military cooperation. Ooh, just like we train all the other groups, training and equipping the Congolese armed forces to protect mineral supply routes from foreign backed militant groups, granting the U.S. access military bases in key zones. Oh, we got to build bases, and replacing ineffective peacekeeping from the U.N. with direct U.S. probably mercenaries as well.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, you can look at it however you want. I mean, Trump. You know, this is a win for him in terms of the aspects that he got a pretty good deal out of this for the United States. Now, is it ethical? That's another question, right? But I mean, this should have been one of those things that should have been addressed a while back. But the only thing is it like, do we trust, you know, whoever these corporations that are going in and extracting the resources to do it in a way that actually benefits the region itself?
No.
That's the real equation here.
It's all nice that I guess we can make money off of it, but it's still going to be the same evil people. We're probably just going to train them, make them better at doing their job.
Yeah. I mean, the U.S. is not stepping in out of charity. It's stepping in because the Congo means securing minerals for countering China.
Hey, we're gonna make a deal with each other. We're gonna have a good time. You know, you're gonna let me run your country. You're gonna let me put military bases in there. We're gonna trade a lot of this gold together.
Yeah. And so it's, you know, I was just thinking about it. It's like it is this competition. And so I think they're willing to do this because China has its own, like, I would say it's borderline slavery what happens over there, too. There's a whole population that's suppressed and that is also working insane hours. There are people that live in the factories that don't get to go home for months.
The suicide net
sitting outside. Yeah. So it's like, you know, they're able to compete on this market because they're not having to be ethical about their decisions on what they make. And so the United States and these other countries are like, well, we can't do that in our own country. We got to find another way to compete here.
Mm.
So, yeah, this is the end of my deep dive. It's just, again, I wanted to kind of step away from what's happening in the mainstream and what we've seen in Iran and Israel and in the past of US, because I've covered a lot of that stuff. This one was just kind of like season it with something different, because these are things that are happening in real time as we speak.
Sure. And we want you guys to just be more aware in general of the planet and the things going on in these various regions that aren't often discussed. And that's what's so amazing about the deep dive is we're not forced to be local to like, oh, what happened today? We can go back, look what happened 10, 20, 30, 100 years ago, sometimes even longer than that. And we've got so many phenomenal deep dives done already. If you go to Gray Area Talks on YouTube, you can watch dozens and dozens and dozens at this point of Tim's phenomenal deep dives, my commentary as well, my info as well.
We're also on Rumble. You can watch the full videos there.
Every
Sunday I'm doing a deep dive. And of course, we can't cover every single deep dive on this show. And I also do a newsletter where I'm doing deep dives out of that. And I'm creating these articles based off of like condensed down information for you to learn about. And if you click on the link when you go to Gray Area Talks, you can find all of that.
Yeah, it's all there. We're super proud to be able to offer this information. And this is the thing about like our show, why I think it's unique, why I think it works. I want to monologue. I want to do news blitz, but I also want the chance to be able to in real time learn something new and then analyze the information, have a conversation with you about it. And I know you're really researched on whatever you've gone down the line on.
I like to like, I'm like almost like granular. I like to just go in and focus on like these core things. And then that's why I like you come in with like all the different flavors and the seasoning of what's happening.
It's microscope perfect. And then 30,000 foot view where you get the full perspective. You can also see the forest for the trees, but also touch the tree and know what it is. And then we love doing that. We think it's a really unique show. Just want to remind you guys, coming up in the next hour, we have Amy Dangerfield joining us. You're not going to want to miss that. I want to go ahead and show this. Were you able to find it on my Twitter, the Lebanon stuff? Were you able to? All right. I want to go ahead and show what's going on right now. Lebanon's getting destroyed, man. And keep in mind, in the peace plan, the peace proposal, I don't know where it is right now. The end of Israeli military operations in Lebanon, that's point three. Breaking, the Lebanese Red Cross reports more than 300 killed or injured in the latest wave of Lebanon strikes. Can we go to that video there in the top left when we get a chance? It's really apocalyptic. And we talk about the African mines and stuff and people going through things we can't even imagine. I mean, imagine living here. Imagine dealing with this. Mm. It truly is brutal. There may be one more thing that I've retweeted. The thing I retweeted was like, I mean, here's the thing. If this doesn't stop, the war is going to continue.
Well, that's what we were talking about earlier at the beginning. I'm like, how does this conflict stop in 2 weeks when you have Israel and the United States that are basically in bed together and we don't have full control over what Israel's doing?
Sure. And that's the problem. If you're going to make the argument, this is our strongest ally. Well, the strongest ally needs to listen to us and needs to abide by the ceasefire. Let's go ahead and go to the neocon ghoul roundup, because while we were doing the deep dive, they came in and just threw us a stack of just these neocon ghouls reacting to the peace plan.
Let's go to Lindsey Graham, right?
Yeah, let's go to Lady G first. We were talking, oh, I'm at the Magic Kingdom, y'all. Okay.
I wrote this really long tweet for you. Yeah. I like it long.
We like long ones. Again, a diplomatic solution to end the reign of terror in Iran is the preferred outcome. The supposed negotiating document, in my view, has some troubling aspects, but time will tell. I look forward to the architects of this proposal, some strong young boys. But time will tell. I look forward, blah, blah, blah. The vice president and others coming through to Congress explaining how a negotiated deal meets our national security objectives. As President Donald Trump said this morning, All the highly enriched uranium must be removed from Iran and handed over to the United States, the Libyan model. Okay, this ain't happening. We read the Iranian statement. Yeah, did they talk about giving up the enriched uranium?
Yeah, they're worlds apart on the deals that they want.
So here's the thing. We have Trump, and it looks like he's looking to make a deal here. And then you got the people that are around him, like Lindsey Graham, like Mark Levin. They're pushing. They're like, it's not enough. It's not enough. We must have more, more, more death now, now, now. Never take no for an answer. Like, they still want the regime change, even though they won't admit it.
They do.
Allowing this regime to enrich in the future would be an affront to all those murdered by the regime since this war started. It would be inconsistent with denying Iran a pathway towards a bomb in the future. That's why I strongly support President Trump's statement today, no enrichment for Iran. When did he say no enrichment for Iran? I pay attention to the news. I've been following the news intently. I have not seen Trump say no enrichment.
Uh, I think I saw that on his original 15 point. No, actually, they said you can use it for civilian purposes.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And keep in mind, because things get memory hold. I remember, okay, around the time of the 12-day war, may have been before, may have been after, Witkoff going, okay, well, they only want to enrich up to 3.5%. We can agree to that. And then he comes out a day later and goes, no enrichment, on Fox News. Just like stares, no enrichment. Like Bongino, there, I've seen the file. He killed himself.
Okay, so this is an article.
Okay, here. Trump, there will be no enrichment of uranium in Iran. President Trump said Wednesday that Iran will not enrich uranium and the U.S. will work with the country to dig up the B-2 bombers. What? As I guess to get the bodies or something? I don't know. As latest agreement reached between two countries, the United States will work closely with Iran, which we have determined has gone through what will be a very productive regime change. This is taunting the bull here. There will be no enrichment of uranium. The United States will be working with Iran, dig up and remove all the deeply buried B-2 bombers, nuclear dust. It is now and has always been under very exacting satellite surveillance. Nothing has been touched since the date of the attack. We are and will be taking tariff and sanctions relief with Iran. Many of the 15 points have already been agreed to.
I can't understand this thing.
It's so creepy.
I'm just saying, like, there's so much information war. Like, you know, Iran saying, oh, we got our agreement on the 10 point. And then this is from today that he's saying, well, they're agreeing
apparently
to our 15.
Apparently so.
Make it make sense.
So yeah, that's a key analysis that you do there, Tim, about Trump. He's reflecting on the 15 point plan, not even on the 10 point plan.
Right.
And he's like, okay, well, some of the things in the 10 point plan are also in the 15 point plan. So they've agreed to some of those. So that's good. Hey, at least they're having a negotiation.
And then you got like Lindsey Graham that comes in. You know, I went to Disney, Rex, and they told me if I clap my feet three times, I just get more war.
That's right. Oh, my. Oh, dude. Oh, yeah. He clicks his heels, and then a nuke goes off. That's so sick. Last thing he says, the last thing I'm interested in is for Iran to be able to save face. I'm interested in a deal that will stop their maniacal drive to a nuclear weapon, among other things. What is the other thing? Regime change. And we all know that. Now we'll go to Laura Loomer.
Ooh, your favorite.
Because you guys just handed us a whole stack of this, so we got to read it.
Laura Loomer, she is a boomer. She's critical. She's flip-floppy. She's just like, she just wishy-washy, man.
I think she's real idealistic. I think she works for another country.
And then I see her attacking your dad like every day. Like, she's just got a hard-on for him. I'm like, jeez.
I'm going to go ahead and read it. The reality is, this is from Laura Loomer, the reality is these negotiations are awful for America and they only embolden the terrorist regime in Iran. How is it awful for America that Americans stop dying and that our money stops being spent on a conflict we're already losing? Mm. Luckily, President Trump wasn't in charge of negotiations. What? What?
Trump would never say that.
Oh, he's okay. So she's removing the credit from Trump for doing the good thing. This is how they like beat Trump. They're like, bad, down, dog. Like that's how they treat him. That's what we need. What we all need to remember when the ceasefire that isn't a ceasefire fails. Ooh, okay. So she's predicting that it's going to fail. And Americans are attacked and killed by Iranian proxies of the IRGC. Oh, what's that mean? False flag attacks coming?
Could be.
I mean, wow. Trump understands the real danger and threat posed by the Iranian regime, which is why the people around him, I'm sure we can all figure out who planned the New York Times story, stabbed him in the back yesterday by leaking private Situation Room conversations to New York Times to pretend like they were against the war. Many of these people were on the record supporting the war themselves. She's right. She's 100% correct. She's like, hell yeah, I'm a warmonger. Y'all are being cowards.
At least she stands.
Dude, Laura Loomer wants. W. Like, this is the truth, though. Iran will continue being a threat to the U.S. and Western civilization. That means Israel. Until the regime is wiped out. I guess that's also true. If you mean Israel. People who think that you can negotiate with the regime don't understand how brutal their Islamic ideology is. President Trump will be proven right in the end. Those who negotiated with the Islamic terrorists were made to look like fools. We're already losing the midterms due to GOP incompetence and representatives who refuse to codify Trump's agenda, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, so the part that I want to just quickly address here, she says, people don't understand how brutal their Islamic ideology is. There is some truth to that, okay? There is some truth to that. Every country has its dark sides. You know, just because it's the underdog that's getting beat up and you've got like Israel and the United States coming in and making these haymakers and they're, you know, now the underdog does not mean that Iran doesn't have its own issues in which it treats its people poorly.
Here's how I look at it. Like you say, everybody's got their issues. They're not hypocrites. We're hypocrites, man.
In what capacity are you talking about?
Well, they're like, well, we're a theocratic regime. We have the supreme leader. Like, God tells us to do these things. God tells us to, like, be martyrs, to fight for the cause or whatever. And in America, we're like, oh, we're liberal, happy time friends. We want international world order. We want peace around the world. We're like, murder, kill them all, take the oil, glass them.
You're like, they're ideologically consistent. Like, they're like, at least we know we're treating our people this way. We know we're doing these things. We're not ashamed.
They're not a mystery box. Yeah, like, the idea that they're a mystery box is ridiculous. Like, the U.S. is really the mystery box. You know, we really don't know what we're going to do.
Okay, I'll give you that.
We can predict them. That's the claim that I make. Here, and if you can predict somebody, then you probably can reason with them. Yeah. We can have negotiation, which is why, like, here's the thing. I've been very, very black-pilled on Trump. I'm white-pilled on this. I think there is a strong chance that this goes through and that we actually see end hostilities, but we're worried about the various factors. I mean, these people are super upset. Like, these neocons they're super mad right now.
No more military money for me.
That's right. That's right. I'm going to read the next Laura Loomer tweet. The official Iranian foreign ministry accounts are posting images of President Trump bowing down to Iran. Take a look at the post by the Iranian embassy in India. Muslims never negotiate in good faith. That's taqiyya, which is the Islamic practice of being able to lie to further the religious interest. They are stalling while their propaganda arm in the U.S. media, which includes woke right broadcasters and elected Democrats, turn on President Trump and move to impeach him and call for him to be removed by the 25th Amendment. The Islamic Republic of Iran, if allowed to collect a toll through the Strait of Hormuz, will bide their time through the remainder of the Trump administration and pad their bank accounts to fund Iran's terrorism for decades to come. Then, the second Trump is gone, they will build a nuclear weapon and attack the U.S. and Israel. Negotiating with terrorists only makes them stronger. Sadly, I think the U.S. is going to learn.
You know who she's talking about when she talks. Who she's calling here.
Lay it on me.
She's saying she had woke right podcasters, elected Democrats. So that 25th Amendment. Now, I watched the video.
Oh, you're talking about us.
She's definitely talking about your dad yesterday on the show. He went on. I forget the guest.
He was talking to Robert Barnes.
Okay. Yeah. And so they went on and he was talking about, like, what are the chances that they could, like, the 25th Amendment. You can probably clarify better than I can.
Well, so 25th Amendment means that the cabinet realizes that, like, president's lost his mind. They get him out of there. It's actually a lot harder to get than impeachment, as Barnes kind of detailed. But now that Trump has talked about the 2-week ceasefire, I mean, literally just that he can say something and then everything else, like the weeks and the months of just crazy genocidal language and attacks everywhere and starting the wars he said he'd never start, all that just goes out of the window. And now everyone's like, you said Trump should be 25th. He's being insane.
How dare you? Dude, not my president, Trump. What happened to the old Alex? That's not the Alex I remembered. He's supposed to be a neocon.
He's supposed to support war. And it's just like, no, like, we've never supported the war here. We've never changed. We've always been 1776. We've always been America first. Well, whatever MIGA means, like, we're just not that. We're not making Israel great again.
And then you just look, Laura Loomer, you even got, like, the quartering coming in trying to throw his haymakers from the top.
But it's all jokes. It's all jokes. No. It's all, everything he says is humor. So none of it's to be taken seriously.
No, I honestly realized that we got very gaslit that night when we debated.
Dude, it was crazy, man. Yeah. And the thing is like, he takes that away as some sort of win when, like, we're just telling the truth.
Yeah.
You know, and like he's like, oh, I was able to lie convincingly. And it's like, well, not really, bro.
Just to give you guys background, because maybe not everybody was watching our show. Sometime last week, we did a debate between Rex and the quartering. I kind of sat there and moderated it. And Rex was
the debate that wasn't the debate because he doesn't believe in anything.
Right. And Rex was just trying to get him to stand on business because he said some wild, outlandish thing.
Glass Iran, bury them, take the oil, and move on.
Right. So then when Rex confronts him on these issues, he's like, I was just joking, man. I don't really believe these things. But then now I see him coming out with posts and, like, he's being serious.
He's on Twitter every 30 minutes, yeah, like, gloating about, quote unquote, being right about the war. Why? I thought that you didn't support it.
Yep.
You know, why are you acting like you now support the limited military action?
Yeah. So look, that's. See, like, he is trying to do political commentary.
Dude, this is serious political commentary. I'm going to read it. Boats are passing through the Strait of Hormuz right now. Feel free to find the mini clips showing it. Lebanon was not a part of the ceasefire. Sir, Trump capitulated nothing. We've read the agreement. Oh, okay, it's point number three in the 10-point peace plan that Trump says that they're working off that framework. This is political commentary, sir.
It is.
You don't so you coming on the show and saying everything you've ever said on Twitter is a joke. You're too afraid to debate one position with me. Not one position. He said he had no positions, that everything he's ever done.
It was
is
just
a joke.
An easy cop out.
But that's,
and there's a lot of people that are doing
but
that.
He, yeah, and that's the point I want to make. He's not even that important. It's just an example of what we struggle against. And you have Laura Loomer here talking about the negotiations, and there are points in here that I agree with. Like, she's right. The neocons that support the war are now lying about supporting the war. Now, someone like Laura Loomer, you could actually have a debate with, because she would actually stand on business and represent her position. Even if it's evil, even if it's crazy.
She well, let me would. Finish. Yeah, go ahead.
Even if it's evil, even if it's crazy, what's worse than that to me are these the chicken crap cowards that act like they're, I don't do it. I'm just a blob. You can't touch me. I'm a cloud. And they have these hardcore political takes. What are your thoughts?
Agreed with you on that. But with Laura Loomer, she's lost all credibility in my eyes.
Okay.
Because I see her doing the wishy-washy stuff. She went to India like this last month.
Ooh, okay.
And she's out there like taking pictures in front of the Taj Mahal. I love the Indian people. Guys, can we pull up the, there should be a picture on X with like a montage of all the nasty stuff that she said about Indians and how they like need to go. Yeah. I'm sorry.
You're good. Go ahead.
But like, if we can find it, and I'm just saying, she's like, I love India. This is the greatest trip I had. The Indian people are so amazing. And literally like 6 months before, she's just completely ragging on it. So when I see that wishy-washy stuff, I'm like, you don't really stand a lot. You're just going where the wind blows, or where the business opportunity is, or what makes sense for you signaling.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. And we see a lot of that. And she's like, she's just like going after Indian people as hard as you can go on Twitter. She's going after them. She's over there. I love you. It's so wonderful. See? Oh, the elephant. Oh, I love you. And it.
She wrote, I love you. Wow. Look at that.
She drew a demonic Talmudic sigil on the elephant. To turn into a beast of war.
So my whole thing is like, if you're going to hate Indians, you're going to hate something, you know, like own it, right? True. Don't try to sit there and be wishy-washy at the end and try to make it seem like you're such a peaceful person. So I throw her in the same boat as the quartering, believe it or not. I think she's going to stand on like business, but that standing is on like sand. So.
Yeah, no, sure. I mean, it's all just it constantly fluctuates, and we're going to be ideologically consistent. That's one of the many missions of this program. I want to remind you guys right now, methylene blue tincture sale. Get it for under $17 every month. Just subscribe and save. You don't have to think about it. A lot of people, they get the product, they love it, they don't reorder. Go ahead and reorder. Go to thealexjonesstore.com. We've also got the InfoWars cooler, limited edition. Get that for $99.99. Get that for $79.99. If you are a VIP member, we love the VIP program. We will be right back here with Amy Dangerfield in the third hour. We love it. Stay tuned. Infowars.com, The American Journal.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now, new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up, go to the UN's own website, they admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this house where it put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger. Pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultra methylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue with this water. I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. It's T3. It's X2 back even better. At thealexjonesstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, We have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, theolicensstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things, libido, stamina, energy, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at theolicensstore.com, and I thank you for your support.